Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing from iHeartRadio. It takes the work of an insightful and creative mind to fully capture the unparalleled beauty of nature in its purest form. While a colorful sunset or ripples in the water might be a sight to behold, for the average person, in the hands of my guest today, they become a work of art. Carolyn Marks Blackwood is a photographer who captures the changing seasons as they unfold around her in New York's Hudson Valley. Her cloud series resembles Rothko, bold colors blocked out in chunks across the sky. Her ice series depicts shifting frozen ice sheets on the surface of the Hudson River, resembling a makeshift stone path one moment and a scattered deck of playing cards the next. Yet Blackwood doesn't stop there. She is also a screenwriter and producer, bringing to life films like Philomena and The Duchess. Considering her professional range, I wanted to learn how Blackwood first embarked on the path to fine art photography.
I got my first camera when I was 7. And my father was a really beautiful photographer. And I used to go in the dark room and work, you know, to develop the film, because they were film cameras then. And I just loved it. I took to a camera like a duck to water. I had been doing photography for a very, very long time. And I just didn't show anyone what I was doing.
Why?
My family, well, I didn't think of myself as that good a photographer. I was just old Carolyn who loved to take pictures.
It was kind of an advanced hobby for you?
Yeah, it was a hobby. And, you know, my family said, wow, you take great pictures, but that was about it. You know, I was thinking about my first show and you came to it. It was my first big show in a gallery in New York City. So I live in a little hamlet, and we have a library, and I live on the river. And I took some pictures of a lighthouse, 2 pictures, to raise some money for this little library, the Morton Library. And they sold for $800 each, which astounded everyone. They were little 8x10s. I just couldn't even believe someone wanted to buy my photographs. The next thing that happened was they said, would you like to be in a show? And so I was in a show with around 15 other photographers and artists. And in walks this woman who I had invited and I barely knew. Her name was Barbara Rose. Barbara Rose is a very famous curator and art historian. And she walked up to me And I was with 15 other artists, and I was thrilled to be in this little library art show. And she said, I'm curating a show in the city. It's going to be with two photographers and two painters. Would you like to be in it? It's probably equivalent to playing softball in your backyard and the Yankees come and say, do you want to pitch for the Yankees?
Right.
It was very scary. And that's the show you came to.
What year was that?
It was 2006.
Now, but was that your nature, that you kind of undervalued yourself and your skills? When they say to you, come and do this, you were like, wow, you couldn't believe it? Or was it something you'd hoped for? Did you want to have a commercial career as a photographer?
No, it was a total accident, because I didn't think of myself as a legitimate photographer. And to add to that, most of my artist friends, I was friends with lots of artists, and I collect art and I love art. They were horrified because they had been at it for so long, long time, and nothing like that had happened for them. And I couldn't call myself a photographer for a very long time. I felt like an imposter.
Do you go out into your world or in whatever experience you're having, wherever you are, and everything is the opportunity to shoot a picture? Because I know a lot of people have their camera and they love that they can whip it out and shoot this and shoot that. They've got it in their pocket. And the convenience is unparalleled. But I wonder, do you set out with a camera and say, this is my time to photograph something, whatever it is, or to find something to photograph with a real camera, and then the rest of your life, your phone is a phone?
You know, I live in a place that is my subject. My subject matter is mostly here at my house. I get deeper and deeper and deeper into this place. I have made a study of this place since I've been here 2006. I think it's great that everyone wants to take a picture. It doesn't take away from me. If people want to express themselves creatively by taking a picture with their phone, I'd love to see it.
But let's say at the very least you're walking around somewhere and you see something you want to capture and you don't have your camera with you, your regular camera that you do your work with, and you take out a phone and go, well, I want to shoot this to remind me that I want to come back here and do it with a real camera or a real professional camera. Do you do that, or do you pull your phone out and start shooting and you're satisfied with the quality on a phone? Must your work always be done on a legit camera?
Because of the size of my photos, I need pixels. But my camera now has 40 megapixels, I think it is. My phone, for instance, I have a bird series where in the fall, all these birds like flock, thousands of birds. And I was walking on the farm road where I walk every day. And there was a flock of 1,000 birds. And I used my phone because I didn't bring my camera. Of course, I came back later with my camera.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, but it's most of what I take, like that flock of birds, are so ephemeral. It's there for a moment. It's there for 30 seconds. It happened to be there for an hour, and I took pictures. But when I take pictures out here of a moment, it really is just a moment. If you look at it can be a lightning strike, like, you know, that photo of the lightning strike.
That's a moment.
That's a moment.
That's a real moment. Now, you were born in Anchorage. How long did you stay in Anchorage before you guys relocated?
2 years.
So you were there for 2 years. So it's hard for you to recall what Anchorage was like back then.
It's hard for me to recall it, but I have to say I went back because I was hired to be a photographer on the USCG Healy, which is the biggest icebreaker. It's a Coast Guard icebreaker, and it's a scientific expedition icebreaker, 450 feet or something. And I was hired to do that, so I went back to Alaska. I went to Anchorage, And then I got on the boat in the Aleutian Islands, and it was, I felt like I was going home. It was so emotional flying over Anchorage. I just, because I had heard the stories from my parents, it was, my mother was 18 and my dad was 24 or 23, and it was their great adventure. And I felt like I was really going home. I love it there.
Even though only 2 years you were there, it felt like home.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And your dad was there, why? He was stationed there, or what was he doing?
He was stationed there. He had gone to West Point, and they gave him a choice of places to do his 3 years of service after West Point. And he chose Alaska because of the salmon fishing. He was an avid salmon fisherman. He chose Alaska for that reason.
Well, then what could be better? Now, you wind up coming back, and your family moves to where? To New York?
Yes, to Great Neck, Long Island, yeah.
To Great Neck, Long Island. Quite a difference from Anchorage to Great Neck, Long Island, but yeah. Better shopping, I would imagine, in Great Neck, Long Island, as I recall. But your grandmother was a painter.
Yeah.
And I guess she took you through that portal into a world of appreciation of art. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what was her background, meaning did someone pass it on to her? Did she come from a very cultured family, or was she herself an artist?
My grandparents were interesting. They came from extremely humble backgrounds and ended up being well off. My grandmother had worked in I have to go back a little bit. I found online my grandmother's mother. She had somehow landed, in Kansas City. And there was a notice that I found in a newspaper through Ancestry where she's suing for breach of promise. She sued my great-grandfather because he had promised to marry her and then reneged on it. So she sued him for $5,000. And then he married her. I wonder about that relationship.
That's a way to land a man, right?
Really?
You don't marry me, I'm going to sue you.
Oh, my God.
For breach of promise. And I'm keeping that diamond, pal.
Yeah. I mean, and this is in the 1800s, and she's from Germany. I mean, wow.
She's like Annie Oakley with a law degree.
Wow. You know?
Yeah.
So that was my grandmother's parents. She worked in an oil company, my grandmother. And then my grandfather, I knew my great-grandmother. She came from Russia, and she was a character. And my grandfather was a runner on Wall Street. And then he kind of got the gist of what was going on, and he asked if he could invest. And at the end of the day, he invested so well and made so much money for his employer, they wouldn't give him what was owed him, the 10% that they promised. So he went out on his own. And I have pictures of him and this woman and another man sitting in a very small room the size of a bathroom. That was the beginning of their company, which was opened in 1929.
Carolyn Marks Blackwood. If you enjoy conversations with brilliant photographers, check out my episode with Brian Hamill.
Well, you have to be discreet, but you have to get your work done. You can't tell the studio later on when they see an inferior set of stills, hey, the guy was tough. You know, the actor was a pain in the ass. That's not an excuse. They just want to see end results. When I worked on Raging Bull, De Niro had an eyeline problem. But he would always accommodate me. He was so sweet about it. He would always not make a big deal out of it. He'd just do it with a hand gesture. I'll do it for you after.
To hear more of my conversation with Brian Hamill, go to hearsthething.org. After the break, Carolyn Marks Blackwood shares a story from her early years, listening and learning from the one and only Leonard Bernstein.
Thank you.
acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. Screenwriting, producing, and fine art are just a few of Carolyn Marks Blackwood's talents. Before that, Blackwood made her living as a jazz singer in New York City.
Music actually was the primary focus for a long, long time. And I started out, I was very lucky. The best part about my family was that my dad was one of the early people at Lincoln Center. He was on the board for many years, and he was one of the early supporters of it.
What profession did he go into?
He went into my grandfather's business.
Okay.
You know, culturally, I was very lucky. Mm-hmm. And I would go to young people's concerts. As a matter of fact, the other day, I went on YouTube and I started playing the young people's concerts with Leonard Bernstein. Mm-hmm. And there am I, and there's my sister sitting in the front row. But what the amazing thing about it was that it was a room filled with little kids that were transfixed. Turn on one of those young people's concerts. Unbelievable. Kids are just staring and listening and transfixed. Mm-hmm. You would think it would be crazy in that room. It's unbelievable.
So when you're singing in these clubs, what would you say? You started singing in those clubs in the West Village around what year?
I'll tell you what happened. It was another fluke. It was another Barbara Rose walking into the room. I was getting my PhD in sociology at Livingston College, which is part of Rutgers. And it had a fantastic jazz department. And I was Like, instead of taking my sociology courses, I started taking jazz courses with the best people in jazz. Kenny Barron was my piano teacher. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
So I'm singing and I'm playing piano in a practice room, and there's a knock on the door, and in walks this guy, and he says, "Hi, I'm here to do a master class with Ron Carter, bass master class. And I was wondering, can I listen to you?" And I said, "Sure." So I'm just playing and singing. And he says, "Hey, listen, I have to go now." It was Bob Cranshaw, the bass player. He says, "I have to go now, but would you like to come down to Hopper's and sing with us?" And I said, "Really?"
How old were you?
23.
Just out of college.
I had just gotten into a program for a PhD in sociology. And I said, "Okay." And I went down to the club three times where they would call me up on stage. And I just went like, "No, I can't do it." I was too scared. Finally, I got the courage to do it. I got up on stage and I sang "Someone to Watch Over Me." And I did it the way that I had learned it from a record from Ella Fitzgerald. And she double times the bridge. So I did that. And I had like eight more bars that were empty because I had double timed the bridge. And I just stood there and thought like, "Oh, well, that was a disaster." And they asked me to sing with them. And I packed up. I left a husband. I left school, I moved to New York City, and I started singing with them. I called up some friends and said, "Are there any apartments in your building?" They said, "We're moving, you can have our apartment." It was just like meant to be.
What was the jazz scene? I'm assuming now jazz is kind of like Shakespeare and other things.
Yeah.
Where there's a perceived fragility to all of that now.
Then there was a real jazz scene. It was thriving. I mean, there were jazz clubs all over the city.
Right.
I mean, we were paid $50. Everyone in the band was paid $50 a night.
It's a lot of money.
And these are some of the best jazz people ever. You know, like, I sang with really great people. And it was a really wonderful experience. And I was doing backups, and I sang rock and roll. It was a wonderful time.
If you got $50 a night, three nights a week, 4 weeks a month, that's $600. You could pay your rent for $600 back then, and then some.
Oh, my rent was $175. And I was living on 83rd Street between West End and Riverside. And I had a railroad apartment, and I was happy as a clam.
I have this image of you with your father who's worried that you're not making money and you could be making more money in the family business. And you look at him and say, "I made $600 last week." And your father's like, "Wow. Wow, that's real money." Now, what happens, because I want to talk about, it seems like you choose your men the way you choose your own occupations and your own passions, which are there all over the map. I want to talk about Christian and Greg, but what is it that pushes you out of the world of singing? You stop singing professionally. Why do you stop, and when?
Because I had very bad nerves. I wasn't comfortable singing in front of an audience. And I decided, I have been writing since I was a little girl, and I decided, I think being a writer, where I can just not do it in front of everyone, would be better for me. So I started writing.
How long did you do the singing thing downtown for? How long?
I think I did it for like around 7 or 8 years.
Wow. So you're getting close to 30 years old now, or you are 30-something years old.
Yes, and then I had my son.
And you decide to leave. What was that decision like? After 7 or 8 years, you concluded that you were a little uncomfortable performing in front of people?
The writing part really, really...
Was calling you.
Was calling me.
What are you writing?
I'm writing plays. Well, and then it turns into screenplays, which I still write today.
Right. What got made first?
Nothing has gotten made, except now three of them are going to be made.
Wow.
Like all of a sudden, things that I wrote in the 80s, and it's pretty amazing. You know, the movie thing is another aspect. I have a partner named Gabby Tanna, Dan Tanna's daughter.
How many meals I used to have in Dan Tanna's in the 90s?
Oh, well, you know what? We're doing a little documentary on Dan Tanna's.
That was a real haunt. You'd go in there, you couldn't believe who was there. Dan Tanna's was a really nice little den.
Yeah, really.
Cozy little room,
den.
Old school.
Exactly. Old school. Yeah. But the interesting thing, and because I've been partners with Gabby since 1992, I've had a few meals at Dan Tanna's. And as a woman, I always felt great there.
Uh-huh.
It was sort of safe haven for a single woman.
Not a lot of wolves there.
No, but really interesting stories. Right. A lot of music people and a lot of deals
done. The people I would see there, oh my God.
Yeah.
Jimmy Garner, I mean, Jimmy Kahn, all these old school people. Burt Reynolds, old school Hollywood was a tenant.
But you know what? I think the young generation is going there now.
Sure.
And
they all want to rediscover those places.
So we're doing a documentary on dance.
So singing, writing, when does the photography on that level, do they overlap?
Yes, and they overlap to this day.
Right.
I'm doing photography. I'm having museum shows that are coming up. I have galleries where I have shows. And I'm making movies with my partner and writing things. So when one part of my brain gets tired, I go to the other thing.
Right.
And it's just a whole other part of my brain. It's wonderful.
Well, I would imagine the things like where you render something, you know, like, I mean, of course, writing renders something, but where you render something, you know, like photography is, and this is my interpretation, I'd love to hear yours, but I'm a huge nut for photography. I've got some beautiful prints in my house that I love from friends and colleagues who are magnificent photographers. But I would imagine that more than writing, in a sense, you get fueled by photography and painting. You know, the process of making something and the beauty and your DNA becoming exhibited over time, whereas writing is really hard.
You know, for me, photography, like I told you, is flying by the seat of my pants.
Right.
I see something and I have a second to get it. So I'm grabbing my camera and I'm running outside and I'm grabbing the light or the patterns on the river, or a storm. And I mean, you know, I love abstraction too. And so because I was so immersed in painting when I was a kid, I see what Agnes Martin saw when she was painting. I see what Rothko saw. I see what these painters saw. And sometimes they inspire me to take a picture that is reminiscent of their work.
But would you say that your concentration, your main concentration of this area adjacent to your home and everything that's specific to that Hudson Valley community that you're a part of, would you say that that's a furtherance of your anxiety about being in public? Does Carolyn Marks Blackwood shoot pictures in her backyard because there's nobody else in her backyard? Is that a furtherance of that, where your creative expression is always, well, you want comfort, and that means less people?
You know, my work does give me comfort, enormous comfort. And the great discovery was that it gives other people comfort, too. I have had notes from people when I do not put something up on Instagram or Facebook or whatever it is. And they write to me, I'm in the hospital. You haven't posted anything for a few days. I'm dependent on your posting. It's my dose of beauty for the day. I have gotten notes like that. It feels like a big responsibility. So other people, I found out, get comfort from it too, which makes me feel wonderful.
Carolyn Marks Blackwood, if you're enjoying this conversation, tell a friend
And be sure to follow Here's the Thing on the iHeartRadio app, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. When we come back, Carolyn Marks Blackwood shares her thoughts on how we might navigate a different landscape, the current minefields of our political environment.
Comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table because geek culture is pop culture. And we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. The first husband of Carolyn Marks Blackwood was acclaimed cinematographer and director Christian Blackwood, who made more than 80 documentary films and passed away in 1992. I wanted to know how her time with her filmmaker husband influenced her career path and her pivot to writing.
I was with Christian Blackwood in the city, and he had a movie he wanted to do, and he asked me if I would write it. And it was the first screenplay I ever wrote in 1980-something, 88, 89. It was called Barbette. And we found this book on a sale table in Paris that was Man Ray photographs of this guy from Round Rock, Texas, who was the toast of Paris, walking a high wire as a woman. His name was Vander Clyde Barbette. And I was so taken with this book. And Francis Stiegmuller had written about him in The New Yorker. And so I went into Francis Stiegmuller's archives, and then I visited the family of Barbette in Texas. And I wrote this screenplay, which never really saw the light of day, but it's about to.
Really?
And yeah.
Now, Blackwood, I want to interject. He was a part of one of my favorite documentaries, which was the Death of a Salesman one with Schlondorf.
Yes. Yeah.
And John Malkovich and Hoffman. I thought that that documentary was one of the most mesmerizing documentaries I've ever seen. My God, that was a great project.
Wow,
I'm
so glad you know about that.
Beautiful movie.
Yeah, he was a beautiful filmmaker.
Now, you tend to minimize the commerciality of the projects you're doing. So setting aside that, you obviously have the resources to, or you can access other people's resources to produce and make these projects. Is it as satisfying as you thought it might be? Do you like making films and plays and producing these?
It's very, I mean, the things that we have produced, I'm very proud of. We helped to produce 13 Lives, which was our last film.
You mean the Ronnie Howard movie about the cave thing?
Yeah. My company helped produce it.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. I love that movie.
Yeah.
Love that movie because I could see, as an actor who's worked in film, how stressful that must have been to be in those dark, dark spaces week after week.
My partner did it. It was during the height of COVID, and only one of us was allowed to go because of COVID. And she went to Australia. Gabby went to Australia and then was put in a COVID hotel for 2 weeks. With an armed guard outside her door. She just went right from the airport into a hotel where she was kept in her room for 2 weeks. Then she was allowed to go out, and there was testing all the time. I think there was testing all the time.
Sure.
And she was in these sets that were caves. They were...
So they built sets for them to be treading water in those caves.
It was not a fun shoot.
You could tell these guys earned their money on that film.
Yeah.
Now, let's just finish with this, which is the woman who grew up the way you did, you know, raised in a nice family with some degree of privilege and so forth, and everybody's in the finance world and doing well, and you're the Blackwood sheep of the family. What about your political expression?
Oh.
You describe yourself as very political. How?
Well, anyone that's not very political now... better start to be, because we're about to lose our democracy.
Possibly.
And I'm doing everything I can think of to support my local politicians, and I mean senators and congresspeople. I've been with Kirsten Gillibrand for a very long time, and we have a wonderful congressperson here named Pat Ryan. And I support him. And what I'm doing is I am having Zoom meetings with these politicians. The reason I'm doing it is because I want everybody to feel like they have access. I have access to these politicians because I support them. And so I get access. There are a lot of people, there are a lot of Republicans that I want to be able to come on a Zoom, ask questions. And when I say Republicans, I mean sane Republicans.
Right.
Ones that are not enamored of he whose name I shall not say.
Right.
And so I just think we need to really talk to people. I want to do a podcast, by the way, that's called Neighbors, where people talk to each other, neighbors.
Across the aisle, so to speak.
Across the aisle, and talk because we've helped each other. But it's important that we talk to each other.
Well, I mean, whoever can solve that problem, because it's tough for people to talk to people that they believe are responsible for the Mussolini of our generation. He's not Hitler. He's Mussolini. He's like a clown and a cartoonish figure. But... of course, the woman who had a camera since she was 7 and went on to become a very successful and very well-regarded photographer. She sang in jazz clubs in New York in the West Village for years. She's made movies, written screenplays, produced these projects. And that same woman, we were joking before the show, in your spare time you make scarves that you sell to people to raise money for charity.
Yeah.
in that vast expanse of spare time that you have.
I know, it's insane.
I wouldn't say insane, but you are the self-styled, you are the tender, artistic soul. I mean, what a life you've had dedicated to just beautiful artistry.
No.
Thank you so much for doing this with us.
Thank you.
My thanks to Carolyn Marks Blackwood. You can find her fine art photography at cmblackwood.com. The Carolyn Marks Blackwood Scarves Collection can be found at jamespaulchung.com. That's Chung, C-H-E-U-N-G. Profits go to charity, including a food pantry in Rhinebeck, New York. This episode was recorded at CDM Studios in New York City. We're produced by Kathleen Russo, Zach McNeese, and Maureen Hoban. Our engineer is Frank Imperial. Our social media manager is Daniel Gingrich. I'm Alec Baldwin. Here's the Thing is brought to you by iHeart Radio.
Comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.